Our next speaker graciously stepped in for another speaker who had to cancel, and I'm glad she did, because I'm really looking forward to hearing this. It's entitled Rockin' the Classics, and the person who's doing it is Janelle R. Duxbury, who holds a graduate degree in library and communications, art, radio, TV, and film. She is the compiler of Rockin' the Classics and Classicizing the Rock. Is that right?
Yes.
Very good. The 1985 discography and its first supplement from 1991. The second supplement is in the works. Janelle is librarian in technical services and humanities division in Memorial Library at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Let's have a nice round of applause for Ms. Janelle Duxbury. Thank you.
Okay. Now I hope you can hear me. Is this, it's not working? I need you to step closer. Okay, we'll move a little closer. I'm not used to doing this, so. The last time I was in this building was maybe over a year and a half ago, and I was sitting in the audience about over there, and I was watching John Adams, the composer, conducting one of his new pieces. But now I find myself up on the stage, and it's kind of a different thing, so. It's new. Now, my topic is Rockin' the Classics, and my other half of my book is Classicizing the Rock. We don't have time for that, so we won't get to that. But I'll deal with the first part. And I have two published discographies, and they're in my reading list, is what is at the end of the handout here. And I'm working on the second supplement now, but my previous publisher declined to do it, and so I'm looking for a new publisher. If anybody has any ideas, my email address is at the top of the page, so please let me know if you have something. Okay, I decided to go a little bit into the background of my topic and then do some examples and go through some what I call frequently asked questions like you'd see on a web page. Rock and the classics together have not come about in a vacuum. There was things going on way before that, of course. You had ragtime in your vaudeville and artists like James Price Johnson and Jelly Roll Morton, Fats Waller. And your big bands did the same thing, using classics in their works. Paul Whiteman, Duke Ellington, Harry James, Tommy Dorsey, Glenn Miller, Woody Herman, Stan Kenton, all of them seem to use classics somewhere in their work. And then we get into the 50s and up through the present day. Jazz artists have also used the classics, like Dave Brubeck, the Swingle Singers, Hubert Laws, Herbie Mann, those kind of artists. So it isn't just rock music that's doing this kind of amalgam of rock and the classics. It's all kinds of music. Well, when you get to rock, we have to go back in history a little bit. And one of the earliest ones I found was the group called The Elegants, which isn't really rock, but it's kind of pop, and it's in the 50s, 1958. And they used, of course, the tune for Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, which is also used by Mozart in his variation in C K265, for those of you that want that information. And it went all the way to number one on the pop charts. And then in 1959, someone named Billy Storm did a song called I've Come of Age, which used Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5. And then even Elvis Presley in the 60s and early 70s used a few classics in his work. In fact, he used Offenbach, McDowell, Johann Strauss, and Richard Strauss. I don't have time to go into all of those, but those are all in my books, of course. And then you get to a little bit more interesting ones, the group called Bee Bumble and the Stingers. Okay, 1961, they did the original version of Bumble Boogie, which is, of course, based on Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee, which is used over and over again in years to come later. They also did a Nut Rocker in 1962, which is a version of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite. And then another one that hit number two on the charts was The Toys, A Lover's Concerto, which is based on J.S. Bach's Notebook for Anna Magdalena Bach, one of the pieces in there. That was 1965. But about that time, rock started to splinter into various different groups of or genres, I'd like to say. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But I think I started in with my frequently asked questions. Number one, how are classical excerpts used in rock music? So I have a few examples, we'll go into those. The first one is the use of a quote within a longer song. So we have this song, Russians, by Sting. And within that song, he uses breaks that have this classical theme, which is from Prokofiev. And I have the source written down on your notes there, so I don't have to go through it. And here we go with that one. I have a little bit of the song, and then the quote. Comes the quote. To the song. Okay, that was an example of an excerpt within a song. Another thing that can happen is an arrangement of a whole, or practically a whole classical piece. My favorite example is Emerson, Lake and Palmer's Pictures at an Exhibition. In 1972, they did a long live version of this, and they did almost all of it, not quite all of it, and they added a few things of their own into it, and it's not exact word for word or note for note. But later, a German band that was a metal band called Mekong Delta in 1997 did the entire piece from Mussorgsky. They did every section, and they did it both in a version with an orchestra and without an orchestra. It's a big double CD. It's a big production. But this is the Emerson, Lake & Palmer version in excerpt. And this is from their new studio version, not the live version, because it sounds better, and this is my favorite version. Synthesizer version. Another thing that can happen is you can have classical versions that are very close to the original composition. And my next example is Kevin Ferguson, who does Bach. And he prides himself very much on sticking very closely to the arrangements. In fact, he gets the scores, the actual classical scores, when he's doing his transcriptions. And he even sells copies of the actual transcriptions the way he does it. He uses a 1974 Fender Stratocaster electric guitar. And then he adds synthesized background that he does himself. And here's an example of this. It's very, very Bach-like. Thank you. another band that does really strict classical versions, I think is kind of interesting. They model their name after a rock band. It's called the J.S. Bach Experience. And that's sort of a play on words on, of course, the Jimi Hendrix Experience. So I thought that was kind of cute. When they play on stage, they wear period costumes and wigs and the whole thing, but they're playing electric instruments, electric guitars, bass, drums, and they like to tell jokes about Bach on stage. I don't have any of their jokes, unfortunately. I wish I did. And then versions can vary very, very much from the classical version, and they, you know, a whole different beat to it. And the next one is Malcolm McLaren, who is British, and he's, this is from 1983, '84, and he did a whole album called Fans of Classical Things, and the version I have got this from at home is one of those old vinyl singles that's big, 12-inch, and plays at 45 RPM, so we don't see those much anymore, but that's what I was using. And this, of course, is going to sound not real close to the original compared to the last.
Cho-Cho Sam was her name, and Mr. Taylor Wolf. Take it away, Cho-Cho.
So you get your opera with a little beat in the background. There's a lot of other ones like this, too. There's a version of Paris, Jerusalem by a band called Mafia that kind of takes the song or the pieces of music and puts it together in strange ways, and it's so gnarled up you can hardly tell what it is. There's one by John Oswald, does a version of Vivaldi's section called Spring on his album Plunder Phonics, which I think is a cute title. But it's only available to broadcasters because there's copyright problems. And he takes a standard recording of the Vivaldi and uses splices, speed variations, and overdubs to really obliterate the original again. So they can really create havoc with an original. Another thing that can happen is sampling used in a piece. And the next one is another Malcolm McLaren, and it's from his album Waltz, Darling. So it's a waltz. That's an actual orchestra that was sampled, a record was sampled, and put into his song. So let's try this one. I kind of like this, but it's some people may not.
Shall we still?
Essentially dance music.
Do you wanna dance with me?
And shall you be my new romance?
Shall we dance?
And shall you be my new romance?
Now some other examples like this of this, of course, your version of a song called Enjoy Yourself by a new rap artist called A+. He actually samples not a classical piece, but the original Walter Murphy disco hit, A Fifth of Beethoven. So he's not sampling classical, he's sampling other rock, which is in turn taking a classical theme, which is Beethoven's Fifth. So it gets kind of complicated. After rock split into these different subgenres, like I said, about end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s, it got more complicated, and I'm going to talk about a few different subgenres that also use classical quotes. And it goes all the way from this rap artist A+, all the way through Frank Zappa, so we have A through Z. In the late 60s, we have your Baroque rock, which was actually called that because they used so many Baroque themes and Baroque types of music, pretend Baroque. And you have bands like Beggar's Opera, Manfred Mann's Earth Band, Focus, Genesis, Exception Trace, Renaissance, Yes, Frank Zappa, who was fond of, well, he wasn't Baroque rock, but he goes into progressive rock in the later years. And he was fond of Stravinsky, Varese, and Francesco Zappa, who is not a made-up name. Frank Zappa actually unearthed that there was a real Francesco Zappa composer from the 1700s in Italy, and he did versions on a synthesizer of this old Italian music. There's a whole album. And then, of course, we get into your synthesizer music. We have bands like Diodato and Walter Murphy. Walter and or Wendy Carlos, the synthesizer artist, who Walter became Wendy, if you know what I mean, who did Switched on Bach in 1968 and many albums after that. So I'm going to play my progressive medley, which will go from the Baroque rock all the way through the current progressive rock. And the ones at the end are two bands that are fairly new from the 90s. And I decided to put them in because they were nice enough to give me free copies of their albums, and they wanted a little plug. And they put one classical piece on each of their albums because they thought they could be called progressive if they did that, because that's kind of like what you have to do. To be called progressive, you got to put a classical piece on. So it's a short medley with excerpts from several things in a row. And it's on your piece of paper under progressive. Violin player in the band. And, of course, your pop rock has classical quotes too: The Doors, Electric Light Orchestra, Eric Carmen, who did mostly Rachmaninoff. Apollo 100 did that song called Joy. It was Bach. And Blood, Sweat, and Tears did Satie and Bartok. Falco did his song Rock Me Amadeus that went to number one in 1985. The Beatles have used a few short quotes, and especially in All You Need Is Love. And there's a bootleg LP that has the Beatles doing a vocalese rendition of Rossini's The Barber of Seville. Got to hear that at the recordings archives at the Bowling Green State University. And I know that Mr. Shirk is in the audience here. And there's disco versions. Walter Murphy's Fifth of Beethoven went to number one in 1976. The Philharmonics, not the Philharmonics, but the Philharmonics, did an album of all disco classics called The Masters in Philadelphia. And there's another one by Philharmonic 2000 called Disconcerto. So they took disco and concerto, put it together, Disconcerto. And the worst one is Kazooed on Classics by the Temple City Kazoo Orchestra. With Kazoos with a Disco Beat in 1982. It's pretty awful, and I didn't bring it in. I didn't bring any disco versions. People go running when they hear those. So. There's even one in the punk category. The actual Sex Pistols, who Malcolm McLaren started out with, did a version of Land of Hope and Glory in 1976, but it wasn't released until 84. Of course, that's based on Elgar's Pomp and Circumstance. And in the soul area, we have the Supremes, Stevie Wonder, Sam Cooke. I found at least one reggae version. The Ya Eerie Chorus did something called Sensimillion, 1982, which is Handel's Hallelujah Chorus. New Wave, Klaus Nomi in 81, Lords in the New Church, 1982. A Latin Beat, the Latin Rascals album Bach to the Future, B-A-C-H, Bach to the Future. There's a scratch album by the Mutant Rockers called Classical Scratch. So it's like a breakdance rhythm over scratch altered classical themes. I didn't bring that with me either. Maybe I should. I found one hardcore example, which a band called Iceburn used Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, a ska version. The Nutty Boys did Beethoven's Für Elise. Another dance one is Mozart Master Mix, Dance Mixes of Classical Stuff, 1997. Now on to the infamous metal medley, which is one of my favorite areas. So I tried to keep ones that wouldn't offend anybody, but we'll see how it goes. My metal medley. Yeah. words about some of these. The first one, Yngwie Malmsteen from Sweden, really started off this neoclassical metal trend, and he was followed by all sorts of other guitarists doing the same thing. Uli John Roth, Michael Fath, Roland Grappau, Wolf Hoffman, Tony McAlpine, and many others. And it's just, Europe is just having many, many of these guitarists all following suit. Members of Sabotage that you heard also performing the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, which followed. The Great Cat, who did the Beethoven's Fifth, is a woman who is, in fact, a Juilliard-trained violinist who turned into a thrash metal guitarist. And her real name is Catherine Thomas, and she dresses pretty way out there in leather and lace and all of this stuff. And but she's quite normal. I emailed with her, and she's a real regular person when you get to know her, I guess. Other metal bands that frequently use classical quotes are Angra, Deep Purple, which I know a lot about, and I've emailed with members of Deep Purple, Stratovaria, Symphony X, and even Metallica has used one classical quote in one of their songs. They used Mars from the Planets. And then the band Spinal Tap, you know, who's the parody metal band, they even included two parody songs in their album and videotape of This is Spinal Tap. One was Boccherini and one was Mozart. They had to include that because metal uses it so often. If they were parodying it, they had to put it in there too. And the last example is a good friend of mine, and he'd want me to tell you. He used his prized 1968 Gibson SG Standard electric guitar. Yes, he really loves that thing. Okay, on to the last example is rap. And I have three examples all from the same album, which is called Rhapsody Overture. That's not a typo. It's Rhapsody without the H because they want the word rap in there. So we'll play three of these. I have short excerpts. I had to work around the four-letter words because there was a lot of them in there. That's the way rap is. So I thought I'd put it in, but I didn't want to offend anybody, but we'll see. Mostly I wanted you to hear the music, so we'll go with that. But I really like these pieces. I really do.
Top dog patrolling the beat.
Dear Malika.
Second one.
You in my arms, your skin was like a rose, lightly caressed by the sun. I chose you before any.
Producers actually hired orchestras and opera singers to work with them and then had the rap singers do their parts in a different studio later, but they didn't use samples. They actually hired people to do all the parts. The earliest rap example I could find was 1988, if you could call it rap. It's sort of early version of rap. Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers did a song called 2000, That'll Work, and that, of course, is based on the 2001 theme, which was used in that movie in the 60s, whatever. 2001. Which is also called, that's also Sprague Zarathustra from Richard Strauss. Now, here's some more questions. I don't have any more examples, but people always ask me, how do I get interested in this topic? Well, in 1969, I heard on the radio a song by the New York Rock and Roll Ensemble called Brandenburg from their album Faithful Friends, which uses Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 5. I was hooked on that song, and I was ever since, and I kept collecting examples from then onwards, so you can blame it on that song. I didn't bring it with me because my copy is a near-mint condition vinyl copy that I picked up at a record collector's fair once, and I've played it once, and I'm going to not play it again for a long time. So, what is the most valuable rock music recording of a classical theme? Well, in Germany in 1972, a band called Tibern Tall, T-A-L-L, did a song called War Game, and it was privately pressed. And it's a version of Bach's Staccato and Fugue in D minor, and an original version is rare, very rare, and sold to collectors as much as $4,000, so that's the most expensive version. Which composer or composition has been quoted most frequently? Well, the overall winner is J.S. Bach. He's used over and over and over again. And the most frequent compositions are Bach's Staccato and Fugue in D minor, Grieg's Hall of the Mountain King, and Rimsky-Korsakov Flight of the Bumblebee. And in closing, and then before I talk about my handout a little bit, I thought, well, what about some lawsuits that have occurred from the use of classical sources in rock music, okay? An interesting one is a band from Belgium who did techno dance called Apotheosis did something called O Fortuna, which is, of course, from Orff's Carmina Burana. They were accused of unauthorized use of a source recording of the Orff. It was an actual orchestra. And because it was unauthorized, it was withdrawn from sale and performance, and there was an undisclosed financial settlement. So they settled that one out of court. On Michael Jackson's album Dangerous, he has a song, Will You Be There, in 1991. In 1992, he was sued for $7 million by the Cleveland Symphony Orchestra over use of a 1-minute, 7-second sample from their 1961 album that he used as an introduction to his song. The final settlement stipulated that the orchestra be credited on future copies of the album, but the terms of the settlement were not disclosed, so we don't know if they got their $7 million, but with Michael Jackson, maybe they did. But he's being sued all the time, so everybody's wanting a piece of the money. But another one, an electronic artist called William Orbit did an album called Pieces in a Modern Style. And he did Barber, Satie, Ravel, Arvo Pärt, and Gorecki. And his was withdrawn because of copyright problems. I saw a big splashy one-page ad in an audio magazine announcing it, and a big deal about how to get it and how wonderful it was, but they had to withdraw it. And then composers' families, their estates have objected to rock music releases using classical quotes, and mostly this happens in the UK. And the composers involved have been Gershwin, Elgar, Holst, and Bartok. And so those have been pulled either for sale or banned on the BBC. That's another thing that happens. So in closing, I'd like to say a little bit about my handouts. I have, of course, all the details on the examples, except for the discographical details, because I didn't have space, but those are in my books or my forthcoming book. I have a list of some relevant websites that might be interesting with the URLs listed there, and a couple of them are connected with me, and others are other people that I've run into or have run across on the web myself. And in the end, I have 2 pages of suggested readings, both articles and books, that have been very helpful to me and very interesting to read. So I thought you could take that home and look at it, see if your libraries have those. And my discoveries are listed there as well, so if you need the details of that. And if you have any quick questions, anybody? Yes? Yes. That's probably true. I'm very, very bad on my rap history, so thank you for correcting me. Mm-hmm. I should have said that. It's a sort of a form of rap type music, but it isn't. But it is Washington Go-Go. You're right. Yes. Okay. I'm not real clear on that, so maybe I will straight. This is not in the stuff I've published yet, so this is good. This is good. Anybody else? Yes. Were they? Probably. Oh, I'm not sure who it was that was being sued. I had read that it was Michael Jackson, but yeah. Mm-hmm. I do too, yes. It was Michael Jackson was the cause, right? It wasn't the classical piece, right? Right. It was that I didn't want to go into all that, but and he also objected to the way that he treated the Michael Jackson song that was on there too, where they cut it up and put it back together, and it's crazy. It wasn't that. It was an album by Tomita, the synthesizer artist, who did a whole album of the Planets.
I know that.
Maybe the other two.
The American and UK pressings of I think it's Forms and Feelings.
Yes, yes.
The one that has the big version of Saber Dance.
Yes.
There is a bit of a hole that precedes it.
Yes.
On the American pressing, not on the UK pressing.
That's probably what happened on that one, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of things have happened that way too, where a song was left off, or the song was cut on subsequent versions. There's a song by Renaissance that there's a quote of Debussy on there that's on some versions of the album and not on other versions of the album, because of problems. And now they reissued it and they put it back in again. So I don't know why.
Question in the back there?
Yes. Wait. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right, they didn't call it that. They called it like in the Wake of Poseidon, and it's like the Devil's Triangle or something like that. I can't remember the name. And then there is a version on a newer record where they could actually call it Mars, so yes. Yeah. Right, okay, thank you.
Okay, let's wrap it up. One more.
Never heard of that one. Who's the artist?
Originally it was
I'll have to check into that, because I've not heard that. No. Thank you.